irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we actually have a guest returning to the show who was last with us on October 2nd. We loved his topic so much that we couldn't wait to have him back, and so I'd like to welcome back to the show Dr. Paul White. Dr. White is a psychologist, author, speaker, and consultant who makes work relationships work. He has written articles for and been interviewed by Bloomberg's Businessweek, CNNFortune.com, Entrepreneur.com, FastCar, FoxBusiness.com, as well as Huffington Post Live, the U.S. News and World Report, and Yahoo Finance. As a speaker and trainer, Dr. White has taught around the world, including North America, Europe, South America, Asia, and the Caribbean. His expertise has been requested by Microsoft, MillerCoors, NASA, and Million Dollar Roundtable, as well as ExxonMobil, the Milken Institute, DirecTV, the Salvation Army, and the list goes on and on. Dr. White is also the co-author of three books, including The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, written with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the number one New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages, which has sold over 250,000 copies. Based on their extensive research and expertise, Dr. White and Dr. Chapman have developed a unique way for organizations to motivate employees that leads to increased job satisfaction, higher employee performance, and enhanced levels of trust. Their online assessment tool, Motivating by Appreciation Inventory, has been taken by over 110,000 employees, and their Appreciation at Work training resources have been used by numerous corporations, colleges, universities, medical facilities, schools, nonprofits, and it has been used in over 25 countries. In his most recent book, The Vibrant Workplace, Overcoming the Obstacles to Building a Culture of Appreciation, which was just released last year in April 2017, Dr. White identifies the top 10 obstacles encountered in trying to build appreciation into an organization's culture and how to overcome these challenges successfully. Dr. White, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I find myself bragging about you, quite honestly, wherever I go. I tell people, oh, you're looking for a speaker. Gosh, you have to call Dr. White, because I think it's such an important topic that we understand both personally and professionally, and that's how do we appreciate one another? So for anybody who missed our show back on October 2nd, why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a history of kind of how you came to study this and become an expert on the topic?
Sure. So I'm a psychologist, and that means I think about and have studied about relationships, initially with families and then family businesses, and then moved into workplace relationships. And Dr. Chapman wrote a best-selling book, The Five Love Languages, that sold 13 million copies. And it's been really impactful in sort of personal family relationships. So I approached him about whether or not he thought the concepts could be applied to work-based relationships, and he agreed. And so we decided to work on it together and developed the online assessment that identifies how each person likes to be shown appreciation, both in the language that's important to them, whether that's words of affirmation or quality time and so forth, excuse me, as well as the other kinds of actions that are real specific. And so did that, started working with different groups and developed some training materials and developed an online train-the-trainer course that's, you know, being used, and just kept going from there. And so it's been a fun ride and continues to grow. So it's good.
And so what do you find, Dr. White, what difference does it make to be able to show and accept appreciation in the workplace?
Well, I just actually finished rewriting and revising, updating the Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. It's been out since 2011 and done well. And so we wanted to update the research. And it's amazing. The Gallup organization found that showing appreciation is one of the core factors that improves employee engagement within an organization. And so kind of all the good things that happen from employee engagement as far as people showing up for work, they show up on time, they follow directions, they get along better, their production goes up, staff turnover goes down. All those kinds of good things happen partly as a result of appreciation. And we actually know from other research that's come out and that we've done as well that you can teach people how to show authentic appreciation. We're not just trying to help people go through the motions and look like it, you know, because that's actually one of the problems with traditional employee recognition programs is that they're viewed as not being genuine, that it's just going through the motions and everybody has to do it. And so people tend to discount the things that come across that lots of times and even creates negative reactions of sort of cynicism, sarcasm, if not just apathy about it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because I feel like I remember even when I first started recruiting many, many years ago, my boss thought I was blowing smoke up her butt, for lack of a better phrase, because I was just always so happy and grateful about everything. And I think that as a young adult, I didn't realize that my overly cheerful demeanor, because it came across false for whatever reason. It didn't come across authentic, and therefore it wasn't well received by my managers or my peers. And I think it created a lot of obstacles for me early on in my career. Do you think, on that note, do you think that there are ever people out there like me who maybe have good intentions, but just weren't taught how to execute appreciation properly? And even though it's coming from a good place, it comes across as kind of off-putting to people.
Yeah, there are. And I mean, I have a good friend, a business buddy, that he's just cheerful and fun. And, and you're just like, dude, don't you ever have a bad day, you know? But in workplace relationships, the authenticity really comes from specificity. We know that we have about 120,000 people on our email list that we send newsletters out to, and occasionally do polls. In one poll, we asked what people don't like to hear as far as when people try to show appreciation. And one of the things is good job. And the reason is it's too vague. It's too global. And I had one tech person say my supervisor wouldn't know if I was doing a good job or not because they're not, you know, technically trained. And one of the things we know is for appreciation to be received as at least potentially genuine, there may be other factors, but that it has to be specific. And so we sort of teach a model of helping people use a person's name, be very specific about what they do. And the third part that people miss is why it's important. So I might say to Stephanie, thank you for showing up regularly, early, on time, virtually every day. Because that helps me not worry about if a customer or client shows up early and we're not here to greet them. And so using their name, being very specific, and how it's important either to you, to the organization or customer can help, you know, them see that, yeah, it's not that they're just sort of blowing smoke at me, but they're actually noticing something that I do that they value.
So it sounds like the context is decisive in this case, that if, you know, you could say, good job, thank you for showing up early. But if you actually specifically give the context, the difference it makes because the person shows up early, it encourages or it makes the person feel more appreciated, if I'm understanding you right?
Yeah, or the converse is just to be global and say, hey, you're doing a great job, you know, or glad you're part of the team. I mean, it's sort of like you could say that to anybody anywhere, and they don't know if you mean it or not because it's so generic. And so trying to be really specific about what it is that you value about them, because that's what appreciation is. Appreciation comes when we value something. If you think about appreciating real estate or anything, it's increasing in value. When we understand and stop to reflect on what value a person has, then we can communicate appreciation about that.
And so what difference does it make in today's very technology-driven world where many employers might have instant messengers or people communicate via text or email? Does it make a difference if the communication is delivered verbally versus via text or another way?
Yes, it does. And in fact, we're just publishing some research on the difference in different ways that people who work remotely like to be shown appreciation rather than people in face-to-face relationships. You know, our book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, identifies five different ways that people prefer to be shown appreciation. And words and verbal praise is one of them. And in fact, it happens to be the most commonly preferred one, about 45% of the workforce. But that means over 50% want some other language. And so you there are some people that words just don't get it. I mean, you've heard, you know, words are cheap, or don't tell me you care, you know, show me. And for some people, it's spending time with them. For some people, it's helping them out when they're on a deadline and they're pushing hard to get something done versus you just say, hey, go for it, you know, hope you get it done. You know, for some people, a little gift of some type, and it's not really a monetary issue. It's more that you've gotten to know them, what they like, and you thought about it. So, you know, this is March Madness time, and so you got to be careful in certain states, you know, what school, you know, you maybe give them a, you know, some kind of icon or graphic about, and that you know that they like, you know, Michigan versus Michigan State and so forth. Or it might be that you notice that they have a certain, you know, Starbucks that they order and you bring it in for them and that you paid attention to what they like. So, yeah, it has to be, it's not always words. And one of the things that we found for people that are, you know, not face-to-face is that a lot of times they really value a video connection rather than just a text or an email or even a phone call, that there's something more personal, obviously, about being able to see somebody's face and their expressions and maybe even hear their tone of voice a little bit differently. And so it makes a difference on how it's received. And that's really the key, right? One of the things I talk to leaders about and developing leaders is you need to learn how to lead somebody who's different than you. Otherwise, you have a bunch of little mini-yous running around. And you may be great, but you have to have a successful team. You have to have people with different personalities, different motivation styles, different skills. And so you have to learn and understand and communicate in ways that are important to the other person, not just, you know, what's valuable to you.
Okay. And what about time? Because I know time, as we've grown and technologically, it seems like we're able to do more in a given day. Let's say you have somebody who's an executive at a company. It could be argued maybe that he or she might not be as receptive to giving or receiving appreciation because they just might not have the time to do it. Have you done any studies or research on that?
Yeah. And in fact, I mean, in the vibrant workplace, you know, we identified sort of the top 10 obstacles to creating a culture of appreciation, and busyness is one of them. And it's like number two. And people are busy. Most people don't need more to do. And it feels like, I don't have time to do this, but a couple of things that we've learned. One is that it doesn't take much time to make an impact. And part of the inventory that we developed is not only identifies a person's language of appreciation, but also the specific action, because there's different kinds of time. Some people like individual time with their supervisor or manager and be able to dialogue and ask questions. Other people, I've had some people, often sort of a shy, introverted woman, said, you know, I don't want individual time with my supervisor. They're sort of intense, I'm shy, but I like to go hang out with my friends and colleagues at lunch or after work. And so sort of that collegiality is important to them. And, for example, I had one CFO tell me, she said, yeah, my language is quality time, and I really appreciate when somebody stops by and checks in for 5 or so minutes to see how I'm doing, and then I'm booting them because I got too much to do. But just that act of, you know, sort of checking in and taking the initiative to do that was meaningful to her. Conversely, we also found that when you sort of hit the mark with what the person wants, it doesn't take much, and they're not asking to be your best friend, you know, and then they become more productive, less conflict with other staff, and you actually, as a team, become more productive at getting things done by investing a little bit of time in the right way with the right person.
Well, that leads me to my next question. What do you do if you constantly appreciate someone and you try to figure out their language and you try each of the different languages and yet you're still met with negativity and resistance? How could we handle it in those situations at work?
Yeah, you tell them to get a life.
especially your boss, right? You just say,
yeah,
hey, you know
yeah,
what?
Yeah, especially, you yeah. It's like, yeah, hey, man, you need to, you know, figure out how to enjoy life a little bit. No. One of the challenges is, and I know it sounds self-serving, but we really have not figured out a way to find out somebody else's language and actions that they value other than sort of this indirect inventory, because in our culture, asking somebody how they want to be shown appreciation is just a weird discussion, right? It's like, how do you want to be appreciated? And the answer is, I don't know, tell me thanks. And that's about what you get, because people don't sort of think about it, and you don't get much variety, much breadth in the responses. And so, like I said, it's not only the language, but the actions. And so, you know, people get it that you're, you know, saying thanks and all that. But if it's not the right thing that really sort of grabs their heart, it becomes frustrating both for them and for you, because they keep doing stuff that's like, you know, this doesn't really get it. And they feel like they're doing this all the time and it's not hitting the mark and you're just hard to please. Excuse me. So we found that, you know, helping teams take the inventory together so that they learn how to show appreciation to one another. And that's been a key lesson we've learned over time. Initially, we started out really focusing on managers and supervisors as the key people, and they still are, but less so, because really people want to show appreciation and encouragement to one another, their colleagues, because if somebody's having a bad day, the first person that knows is their colleague, not their supervisor, right? And you also sort of know what they do and what's tough for them, and so you know more specifics often than the supervisor does. And so it's become really important. It's very powerful, actually, when both supervisors, managers, and colleagues, and even direct reports to somebody, become involved in the process. And that helps relieve sort of the perceived and somewhat real pressure that managers feel like they got to do it all. It just, they can't, and they're not going to be as effective as if everybody takes responsibility. And what one of the cool things is, it helps empower everybody that you don't have to just wait. And if your supervisor doesn't get it, you know, and doesn't do this, that nobody gets any, you know, encouragement, that you're able to take it on yourself, which increases employee engagement as well, as we know that people want to be involved in the process and be able to take responsibility.
I just thought of a funny question for you. Is it up to you to appreciate yourself if nobody at work is willing to do it?
Great question.
And, I don't know what that
actually, you know, it's one of the deals that we deal with. One of the obstacles is when supervisors feel like, how am I supposed to show appreciation to somebody else when I don't feel appreciated? And it's a both and kind of question, right? I mean, it's sort of, yeah, ultimately we have to sort of be self-motivated, and, you know, it has to do with maturity and leadership. But, you know, we all get discouraged at times and worn out. And encouragement and appreciation are very similar, except with the focus of time. Appreciation is really focused on the past, what you've done, and I value and appreciate that. Encouragement is coming alongside in the present and encouraging for the future to say, hey, hang in there. I know that project has been a pain and you're working hard on it, but hang in there. You know, you're doing a good job. And so part of it is, you know, being able to do that for others. But at some point, sometimes you have to look elsewhere for the support and encouragement. And we talk about different strategies, and one of them is looking to friends and family. Sometimes it's not your coworkers that support you through a tough time or when you're not hearing much, but, you know, whether it's your significant other or your spouse or boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, and they say, no, man, you're doing a great job, and, you know, just hang in there. Sometimes we have to look for it that way. And the other thing is, sometimes you have to, you know, have some habits. I mean, about, you know, keeping focused on taking care of yourself. I mean, getting exercise and sleeping well and eating well and taking breaks and having a social life. Because those are the kinds of things that tend to go away first if we let them, and then we get more and more negative and get into sort of a funk, and it's tough to get out of.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. There was a guest on my show about 4 or 5 weeks ago who is an expert at survival. Like, he'd basically been to, I think it was something Survive Thrive. And his book was all about, he had been to all of the horrible disaster zones around the world. And he brought up an interesting point that it's kind of like me first. Like, you want to put your oxygen mask on first before other people.
Right.
Again, this is just something I'm thinking off the top of my head here. I wonder if you would be able to authentically appreciate other people if you weren't kind of whole and complete yourself. I don't know. It's just kind of an esoteric wondering out loud.
No, I think it's practical. And I mean, you know, I wrote a book because we were dealing with positive things. I had people, when I was talking to people, come up and break afterwards and tell me stories about how negative their place was or what a jerk their boss was. So I wound up doing research on toxic workplaces and how to survive them, and wrote this book called Rising Above a Toxic Workplace. And one of the key aspects is you've got to take care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself as an adult, nobody else will. Now, when we're kids, you know, hopefully our folks will. But, you know, we've got to do that versus looking to everybody else. And so there is an element of self-care, not selfishness, obviously. But it's like if I go down, like if a mom goes down in a home, you know, watch out, because it's, you know, in a lot of traditional families, you know, the mom is the centerpiece that keeps things going. And so you got to sort of help take care of mom, and mom's got to take care of herself. Same thing in the workplace. If you're a key player or a leader, you know, you've got to keep things going and work on it. And so it's a challenge, but I guess one of the things we've learned in that I really like is that we can make a difference. Every person can make a difference regardless of your position. And that's important to me, because there's a certain aspect out in the media and blogs and yada yada about sort of woe is me, and, you know, I'm a victim and everything sucks, you know. And it's like, yeah, that may be true, but you got to do something. You know, if you don't, you know, it's not going to get any better. And so at some point, and you may have to leave a bad workplace, but we can make a difference to the people around us by two things. One is, don't contribute to the negative. Okay, one of the chapters in the Bible, Workplace, is on negativity and negative workplace. Well, you know, you don't have to join in, and it takes more than one person to gossip. You know,
yes.
And if, you know, and if people are in a, you know, whining, moaning, complaining, you say, hey, I'll catch you guys later. You don't have to condemn them. You don't have to, you know, say, hey, you guys need to get a better attitude. But just say, hey, I'll catch you later. Or, you know, try to turn things to the positive and say, hey, weren't there a bunch of great games this weekend? Or did you enjoy the weather this weekend? And it doesn't have to be about work. It's interesting how positive comments sort of throw water on the fire of negativity and just sort of douse it. And it doesn't have to be, you know, about work. And so don't contribute to the negativity. And then secondly, really try to turn it to the positive. And whether that's about life in general or about, you know, man, I really appreciate you getting that report to me on time, because that makes it easier for me to turn around, turn it into my supervisor with what I need to do. Just small little things. It doesn't have to be big. They can make a difference.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think that it's so funny. I just joined a new company. In fact, today's show is brought to you by Markham Search, a division of, or J. Hill Staffing, a division of Markham Search, the company that we recently joined. And I had an opportunity to go through harassment training. And you don't realize how toxic it can be if you're in an environment fueled by gossip, whether you're a manager or a colleague, a peer, it doesn't matter. If you are privy to it, you should have an opportunity to go to the person who is accountable, who can make a change. Like if it's a comment or a complaint or a frustration about something related to the office, how rarely, rather, do we actually consider that, oh, you know, what if I went to the person who could make a difference? Or instead of complaining to everybody in the office about how frustrated you are with Betty's slow work or something, what if you went to Betty and said, hey, you know, is there something I can do to help you? Or had a dialogue about it rather than just being crappy behind their back. So one thing that I was even talking to my own internal team here with that was really, really helpful is I think as human beings, we have default mechanisms and reactions. And for each one of us, I think it's a little bit different. So I'd be curious to know your thoughts on this, because what I found was that the three main defaults are complaining, blaming, and justifying. And for everybody, it's a little bit different depending on how you're designed. Some of us, our default is we blame somebody else or something else for how crappy the circumstances are. Number two is that we complain about something that we don't like in a particular situation. And for me personally, when I did some reflecting and looking for myself, I found out that when I feel like my back is up against a wall and I'm not getting the result I want, my fallback and default is to justify. And so kind of like a fun little game to play is just to make a little note on like your iPhone or your smartphone or even on a piece of paper on a sticky note, and just make a note for each column: blame, complain, and justify. and then keep track of it throughout the course of a day or a week, whatever you feel comfortable with, and just kind of figure out what your default is. And then at the end of that day or week, ask yourself, what's it like to be around you? And it just can be a good way to get greater access to self-awareness and see what it's like to work with you.
I think those are great. I two others come to mind. One is to ignore.
Good call.
Respond. And the other one is to withdraw. That instead of being engaged, they just withdraw. And it's sort of like ignoring. But yeah, think on that. See if those fit in there too. I don't know. But those are good thoughts.
Just brainstorming. So let's recap again. So what are the five languages of appreciation for everybody to kind of keep their eyes and ears open for?
So the most common one in the workplace are words of affirmation, which can either be, you know, oral, personal, or written through email and so forth. And you're affirming what you value about the person. You're saying, hey, man, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate this. Secondly, it's quality time, which can either be a time, and it's always time with somebody you value. I mean, time with somebody you don't like or don't value is not quality time. But, you know, it's somebody that, you know, you value time with them. You feel affirmed that they invited you to meet with them or to go out to lunch or whatever. So it can be, you know, with the supervisor, it can be with colleagues and peers. And it can be, you know, one-on-one time. It could be sort of collegial doing things as a group. It could be, you know, sort of a group activity. Third are acts of service. And acts of service aren't rescuing somebody, you know, a poor performer. It's the one context is when, you know, they're pushing on a project and they're trying to meet the deadline and they just they're cramming. And it's like, what can I do to help out to make this, you know, make it work for you? And it could be, you know, bringing in lunch for them so they can keep working. It could be holding their calls so they can keep focused on the project. It could be running, you know, some kind of little errand or doing some menial clerical stuff that allows them to stay focused on the major task. And for a lot of people, you know, it's like one CEO, he said, my language is get her done. He said, don't tell me stuff. Don't give me stuff. Just help me get things done. And that's what active service is. Tangible gifts are, like I said, it's not bonuses, compensation, raises. It's little things that show that you know this person, what they like. So in my office, we like chocolate, and some people like dark chocolate, some people like milk chocolate, you know, and others, you know, if you bring in pizza or something like that, you know, some people like, you know, white sauce, and other people like meat lovers, and you sort of figure out what people like. And it can be, it doesn't have to be food, although it's the most common tangible gift in the workplace, but it could be, you know, a magazine about something that they're doing. Maybe they're training for a half marathon, you get them a running magazine about stretching, you know, so it's that you're thinking about them. And then the last one is physical touch. And believe it or not, I mean, it's an interesting one. And it's a tough one in today's society, given all the sexual harassment stuff that's been uncovered. But physical touch is basically spontaneous celebration. And it just happens. It's like a high five when you finish a project, or a fist bump when you solve a problem, or a congratulatory handshake when you make a sale. So, you know, and it differs regionally. You know, in the South, they tend to give hugs or side hugs. Some people do. And up Northeast, they just sort of nod and say, hey, across the room. I mean, that's as close as they get. But it's there. And you have to be, you know, cognizant of both personal and cultural sort of preferences. I mean, I've had some people say, I don't want anybody anywhere ever to touch me, you know, and so that you got to honor that. But those are the five languages. And we find that, you know, quality time, acts of service, tangible gifts are all, you know, desired. And that if you only do words, you're going to miss over half of your employees in the language that's really important to them.
I think that's brilliant. Well, any other tips or anything you would love our listeners to walk away with today, that just salient points that you want them to remember from today's show?
Well, I would say this, that sort of like you can make a difference. And we have lots of resources, both about appreciation, about vibrant workplaces, toxic places. If you go to the website, appreciationatwork.com, there's free videos and articles and all that, as well as other kinds of things. But I would say just force yourself, I don't know, help motivate yourself to do something. I always say start somewhere with someone. because we learn by trying, and it doesn't hurt, you know, and you'd be surprised at how a little action can really make a difference, even if it's just walking in and smiling to somebody and say, hey, how was your evening? And the other part is it's about them as a person. It's not just about production. It's not that, yeah, they're the biggest producer or seller or whatever. It's that you value them as a person. And so you get to know them as a person, and it'll really start to make a difference in your workplace.
I think that's brilliant. Well, any other websites or places that you would recommend that our listeners go in order to find information about? Maybe they want to hire you as a speaker or take one of these assessments aside from Appreciation at Work?
You know, I've got a personal one, drpaulwhite.com, that has more stuff about me speaking and all that. But either of those are fine. That's great.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you, as always, to everybody tuning in today. And just a reminder that you can find the show immediately after we air on LA Talk Radio under Get Yourself the Job in the archive section, and it's free to download. Or later in the week, you can also find it available on iTunes in podcast format under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We frequently do post a recap of the show as well on our Get Yourself the Job page on Facebook. And I invite you to tune in next week with us. Really fun experience. We're having Gavin Kaley on the show. If you've ever seen those luxurious gifting suites that people go to for celebrity things such as the Grammys or the Oscars or something fun like that, Gavin is a self-made entrepreneur who started off in philanthropy and transitioned that into a successful business. So looking forward to sharing his story with you next week. Tune in Monday at 4 p.m. And thank you again, Dr. White, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.